Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM or to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Now, here's your host and producer, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. One of the impacts of the lava flow in the Lower East Rift Zone is that Hawaiian Electric Light Company, HELCO, our electric provider, has lost a lot of facilities, one of which is Puna Geothermal Ventures, from which they purchased power. And a lot of individuals have lost their homes and their power. So the needs of the community, this island community, have changed as far as power distribution, but the supply has also changed, and I thought it would be helpful to learn more about that. So today I am in the Operations Center for HELCO over in Hilo, and I'm talking with two folks. The first is Jay Ignacio, who's the president of HELCO. Good morning. Aloha, Jay.
Good morning.
And the second is Kevin Walton, who is the general manager for Hawaii Island. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
Okay, first of all, maybe you could just start us out by telling us, what is this facility that we are in right now? What's the purpose of it?
We're sitting in our operations center on Kanoilehua Avenue. We call it KOCC, so our Kanoilehua Operations Control Center. This is where we control all of the generators, and we have remote control capability of our transmission system and much of our distribution system. We're manned here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. This is where we make all the operational decisions. We monitor what's going on our system. There's another part of this operation center where all of the calls from customers who are having power problems or even our link to police and fire is right here. It's our dispatch center. So that's another part of our operation center here.
Well, you know, before we started talking, I had the pleasure of getting an actual tour, and I was really intrigued because I want to ask you about the power supply, and I discovered that with HELCO getting so much of its power right now from individual users who have rooftop solar, you actually have a way to look at what impact the sun is having on the ground. And I thought that was particularly intriguing because Kona is getting an awful lot of VOG right now, and as I saw on your maps, the solar supply from the Hilo side of the island is far greater right now than the Kona side of the island. And I'm assuming it's because of the VOG. Is that what you're attributing it to?
We believe the VOG has an impact on the solar output from these rooftop solar systems. We've actually placed photovoltaic sensors at our substations to monitor the sunlight intensity around the island. And we use that to estimate how much photovoltaic energy we're getting from these rooftop systems. So today, Sherry, while we were looking at the system, we have a total recorded 91 megawatts interconnected to our system, but the output from what you saw today was 41 megawatts. And much of it was, we had more PV output from the east side of the island than the west side, which is intuitively contrary to what you would think. And we believe that the VOG has something to do with that disparity.
Well, it was a teeny bit foggy when I was in Kona this morning, and it's beautifully bright blue sky here, so I'm guessing you're right. But this lava flow has obviously had a big impact on HELCO facilities in Lower Puna most especially. So give us an overview of what the situation is, because I know you've lost your facilities, but there's also many homes that have been overrun that may have been getting electricity. So give us a sense of this. Kevin, why don't you tell us about this?
At this time, we have about 765 poles have been impacted.
When you say impacted, you mean gone?
Yes, overrun by lava. And it's an estimate because there's no way for us to get in and actually do a count. But when we overlay the lava that has impacted the area, we have an estimated count of 765. We've also had a switching station, which actually we had two transmission lines that interconnected Puna Geothermal, overrun by lava, as well as the two transmission lines that actually interconnect to that facility that has been overrun as well. That's just poles and switching station that's been impacted during this event.
At this point in Lower Puna, What areas do not have power that need power? Are there areas like that where they normally would have HELCO service and they do not?
Right now, there are services that have been impacted, overrun by lava, but there's also areas that have been evacuated that no longer have power. In those areas, we currently cannot serve until the event has actually stabilized or we can actually put back anything. Will we put back? Depends on whether or not it can be inhabited after this. That's where we're at as far as the power supply to our customers.
What specific areas are you talking about that you may eventually need to get power back? If, let's just say, the lava didn't spread any further than it already has, what areas are you talking about that normally would have HELCO power that might need HELCO power again?
So that would be in the areas of the Leilani subdivision. There are some areas in Kapoho, Vacation Land, Beach Lot areas that might not have been impacted that might have to get power back. But those areas at this current time is in an area where we cannot provide power due to the fact that the poles have been overrun, as well as the areas have been cut off or in an area not allowed to have people in it at this time.
Have there been any injuries to HELCO personnel during this lava flow event?
Thankfully, no, there haven't been any injuries to our HELCO personnel during this event. And we do have a safety plan that we invoked during this event, which then created three zones. Zone one, which is what we're calling a no-entry zone. And the reason why it's a no-entry zone is because there are SO2 levels as well as impacts due to lava that we really do not want our personnel in that area. And it actually kind of follows along with the civil defense evacuation zone. The zone two is an area where we require our personnel to utilize or have with them monitors as well as respirators when they enter these zones. And those are what we call our zone two. And that actually follows the police barricades where they allow people in and out. We follow a check-in process to the on-scene command center, which is the fire department now moved to the area located by the old runway where they had a landing area. That would be our zone two. And then our zone three, which is the area outside of that zone two, is like a check-in process. So when you enter that area, you would have to know that your next step would go across the police barricades, would be going into zone two. So we created this safety plan to kind of manage that.
You mentioned a runway. What runway are you talking about?
It was the old crop duster runway, Hilo side of the police and fire department in that Pohoa area.
Thank you. Now, I believe, though, that there have been instances during this lava flow where you've actually restored power to some customers and had to actually put up some new facilities. Am I right about that?
During this event, we really did not do power restoration activities. There was one pole in Leilani Estates that we replaced. We had a concern with traffic that was actually blocking the road. Early on, we did have crews respond, trying to clear the roadways. But when they were working in the area, we actually had two incidences where fissures started to erupt in close proximity to the crews. They had to do, you know, stop work and do quick evacuation. So based on those two events, we decided early on to create these no entry zones, and we have not been going in and doing any kind of work. We're not clearing roads, we're not restoring power. I do want to talk about some of the reconfiguration that we had to do on our transmission line. There's two transmission lines, as Kevin talked about, that tie into the Pune Geothermal Venture facility. They also create part of our network. And when the end of those two lines were destroyed, we had a situation where we could no longer export the amount of power out of our Pune plant that we wanted to. So with the loss of the 38 megawatts from Pune Geothermal Venture, you know, our margins are slimmer. And then with that transmission configuration being changed, we no longer could export as much power out of our Pune power plant facility. So that was making our margins a little more critical. And credit to our engineers and to our construction crews, they actually reconfigured and tied those two lines together. That required actually building a new set of conductors across the highway near Ainaloa. And working well with the Department of Transportation, we got the permit approvals to cross that highway very quickly. Within 2 weeks, we were able to reconfigure our transmission, and now we can get our full output from our Puna power plant. And that's making generation margins more comfortable.
I believe that in previous interviews, you have said that HELCO has been supplying around 180 megawatts at peak times. Is that the right figure?
That's about the approximate peak load during the evenings, around 7 in the evening. I think the last weeks we're monitoring the loads, it's more in the order of 170 megawatts right now.
Well, it doesn't sound like we've lost that much demand then, which I would have thought we would have lost because of the loss of homes in the Leilani area and as a result of the lava flow. So talk a little bit about that, because it's not the answer I was sort of thinking you were going to give me.
I also was curious. I would have anticipated with the loss of the load, about approximately 1,000 customers in Lower Puna are still without power. That in combination with the slowdown in the visitor industry, I thought we would have lower loads. But the loads are comparable to what we saw in the last 2 years. And we still haven't quite figured it out. It might be maybe lower output from the photovoltaic system, so that's leading to higher loads. It could be also, you know, I just have some informal conversations, but it could also be people maybe running their air conditioners more because of the VOG in West Hawaii. And I also heard, you know, large volumes of purchases of air purifiers. So that could be adding load. We're not exactly sure at this time, but we do notice that the load is still comparable, even if you would think there would be a reduction in load.
You know, it's so interesting to me. First of all, I think the technical job that HELCO does is truly incredible, and I just, having had the opportunity to see your operations center, it reinforces that. But there's obviously a lot of human factors that go into when, why, and how people use electricity, and this whole thing about, you're right, some people are using electricity more for air conditioners, and I've heard of many people who purchased air purifiers. Fascinating. So do you have sociologists on staff to give you an analysis of this kind of thing?
We actually have a load forecasting group. We actually have one full-time employee here that actually studies loads and does the load forecasting for us. I mean, that's not just all that he does, but that's a big part of his function. And then we work well with Hawaiian Electric, who has 3 or 4 employees just doing load forecasting and understanding how customer behavior impacts the load. We need this information so that we have enough generation available in order to serve the load, and also to do our future planning to see how we can mix in more renewable energy going forward.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about renewable energy, but first, if you've lost 38 megawatts from the loss of Puna Geothermal Venture, which is not now providing any power at all, how are you making that up, given that your demand is still pretty high? Jay, why don't you tell us?
38 megawatts as compared to the 170, you can see that's a big proportion of our system. And what we've had to do is use other units that were idle. So we're using more generators that use fossil fuel, unfortunately. But fortunately, they were there available and ready to run. So we're having higher dispatch to the Hamakua Energy Partners facility. That's the facility along the Hamakua coast near Honokatau. We're also using more of our generation from the Keohole facility in West Hawaii. And we've using more energy from our Puna power plant. We've actually hired more employees in order to staff the plant. That plant was cycling and idle more than operating, but because of this event and loss of PGV, we actually had to restore the staffing to that plant. So we've hired some employees in order to run Puna Power Plant. But that's basically how we're making up the difference.
And before we continue our conversation with Jay Ignacio of HELCO and Kevin Walchin of HELCO, an interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. We're here every Sunday, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM, and we're brought to you by Regency at Hualalai. Thank you so much to them. You may also hear Island Issues as podcasts at lava1053.com and at Koa VoicesOfAlohaCountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Next Sunday morning, I haven't fully decided what we're going to do, but probably it'll be a discussion I had with geophysicist from Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, Jim Kawahikawa, who talked about the lava zones, how they were developed, what they mean, how they impact us. And that's particularly important when we look at the lava flow, which is currently in lava zones 1 and 2, and what the future might hold. And that will be one of more than one thing we talk about next week. Let's get back to my questions for Jay Ignacio and Kevin Walchin about HELCO and the impact this lava flow has had on our power supply and demand. Are consumers anywhere on this island seeing the impact of this event in brownouts, blackouts, loss of power?
We have not had consumer problems or power quality problems. Of course, those customers who were directly impacted by the lava, they're without power right now. We did have some impacts after the earthquake. I think it was May 4th, losing track of time. We did lose power in that event, but I do want to say the improvements we made since the 2006 earthquake, I'm pretty confident they had a direct impact. In 2006, we had a comparable magnitude earthquake. In that event, we almost lost the entire island. We lost a significant amount of customers, almost lost the entire island. And after that event, we went back to look for all of the weaknesses, all the weak points, and we made improvements over the years since 2006. We changed devices that actually detect short circuits on our system. Those devices had mechanical mechanisms that got shaken up in the earthquake and they falsely operated the last time around. We changed all of those to electronic microprocessor-based devices. We secured all of our transformers. We did some bracing on some of our power plant structures. I must say, we rode through this earthquake much better than we did in 2006, and that's all because of the hard work of our employees.
This might be a good time to ask you. Clearly, HELCO is going to be spending a lot of money to get back to a normal state. Between that and the loss of Puna Geothermal, what do you think the impact is going to be on our electric rates in the short term and the long term? What are you thinking?
We're not doing any restoration or rebuild at this time. We're going to have to let this event settle out. Essentially want the eruption to stop before we take any rebuild action. We're not sure at this time what the extent of the rebuild is, and you know, will even some of the impacted residents, will they be able to go back and actually build, or are they going to be relocated? So as far as the cost to rebuild infrastructure, we're not sure yet. We are also looking at the generation side of the equation. When we lost PGV, 25 megawatts of the 38 megawatts, they were actually priced comparable to oil. So in terms of customer bills, since we're using more fossil fuel generation and the pricing with PGV, the 25 megawatts, was comparable, you know, people would think, oh, you're going to have a much higher bill related to the loss of PGV. Well, the pricing was comparable, at least for the first 25 megawatts. But beyond the 25 megawatts up to the 38, we did have better pricing, not related to the price of oil, and we're losing that benefit. The impact to customer bills, we did some projections. They're not as large as people would think. It's in the order of $1.70 per month for a typical bill, residential bill, but it's still moving in the wrong direction. So recently, the governor asked the PUC to work with us, and they came up with some strategies to try and help customers with their bill related to this event. And one of them is they're authorizing us to get more renewable energy from the RFP process, the request for proposal process that we have ongoing, looking for more renewable energy. We already had that process going, and we're looking at actually taking more projects than was originally projected. We were looking at 20 megawatts, and now we may possibly take more. Those projects would have to be projects such as solar combined with battery storage. That kind of combination would not be comparable to a geothermal facility. A geothermal facility is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We can actually control the output of the geothermal. A photovoltaic with battery is not comparable. It's not an exact exchange, but it does have the ability to help us out during the peak periods because we can use the battery storage and actually deploy the energy during the evening periods. So it gives us much more flexibility than just solar alone. Hopefully through the RFP process, we get very good pricing so that we can pass on the savings to customers. The second area that we're looking at with respect to pricing is we're going to be working with Hawaii Energy. Hawaii Energy is actually a for-profit company that is contracted by the Hawaii Public Utilities Commission to do energy efficiency programs in the state of Hawaii. We're looking to partner with them to see if there's more that they can do for Hawaii Island residents to help reduce the bill so they can deploy more energy efficiency programs. The other thing we want to partner with them is to see if we can do more demand response where there's programs where we can work with customers to have the ability to control their load, to control their use, so that we can actually maybe reduce the cost of energy overall for everyone. And the third area that the commission asked us to look at is to see if we can deploy more rooftop solar for customers. You know, our engineers are very good at reviewing the applications that come in. They actually do the technical reviews and get the approvals to customers quickly. But we still have a large queue of applicants that have been approved but have not actually built their systems. So the commission is asking us to see what we can do to actually expand and get those systems connected quicker.
So, Jay Ignacio, how does this affect the state's overall goal of getting to, and I say the state's overall goal, you have often said it's also HELCO and HECO's goal to get to 100% renewable by 2045 or sooner. How does the loss of Puna Geothermal, how does this all play into being able to meet or exceed that particular goal?
With Puna Geothermal Venture last year, we were able to go beyond 57%. They supplied approximately 20% of that renewable energy. So this year, we're not going to make the 57%. We're going to be more in the order of 37% renewables. The RPS, the renewable percentage goal, is actually a consolidated goal between the Hawaiian Electric companies. So it's Hawaiian Electric, Hawaii Electric Light, and Maui Electric. So we did a three-company evaluation to see what is the impact of PGV on that consolidated RPS performance. Projections is we're still on track to meet the goals. Loss of PGV may be short-term. You know, I had a meeting with them, and they're still positive about what the outcome may be. If you look at what was damaged, they lost three wells, but most of their facilities remain intact. It was a switching station that was totally destroyed. They're hopeful that they come out of the event with no more damage. And if that is the scenario, they actually have intentions of coming back online.
When Puna Geothermal was in danger of being overrun, water was put into the wells and there were caps put on the wells or some kind of mud put in. But all of that can be reversed. That's what you're saying?
That's their plan. I think when they did the well protection, they did it in a fashion so that the wells could be restored. I think it would be a good follow-up story session with PGV and maybe the state as to what are the future plans for PGV. We don't own the plant. We just purchased the energy from the plant. They are our partners. Over the years, we've gotten to know them. But in meeting with them and, you know, kind of putting us on notice, saying, still keep us in mind that we still intend to come back online.
Would they be able to produce the same amount of power, do you think, that they were?
I'm not sure. I think it's not going to be an immediate process. They're going to have to restore and study the wells to see if there were any impact from the event. So I think at this time, even they don't know. But I think those are questions that they're better prepared to answer.
As far as other renewable energy sources, some have suggested that there could be geothermal resources elsewhere on the island. Is that something that any of these folks are looking at for the RFPs that you've put out for additional renewable resources?
At this time, there's no project, viable project for geothermal on other parts of the island. So the projects that are bidding into are either wind and storage, wind alone, or PV and storage, or PV alone.
When we talked last January to both of you, actually, at that time you were talking about these RFPs that you were letting to get more renewable energy, and you've just spoken of them. When are they due?
We got the final bids a few weeks ago. The schedule was to review, make selections, and then even if we make selections, we continue to negotiate after making selections. That whole process was planned to be completed by the end of the year, and then we actually file for approval to the PUC early next year. The commission actually wants us to compress that schedule and see if we can get it done sooner than that.
One of the concerns that I've heard people express is that Puna Geothermal was doing fracking. And so the first thing is, could you explain what exactly fracking is, and then tell us if that is something that's happening here on the island in any way, shape, or form?
In terms of geothermal, people speak of fracking, but the term in the geothermal industry, I think, is enhanced geothermal. What some facilities do is they have a source of hot rock, but they don't have a source of steam, just hot rock alone. And in those cases, they will drill a well to pump in water and then drill another extraction well. So as they pump in water, it flows across the hot rocks, and then they'll extract the steam there. So they essentially creating the steam with the hot rocks. That's called enhanced geothermal. People will call that fracking, but that's not the case here. And the case here is Puna Geothermal Ventures, their wells, they have already the natural combination of the hot rock and the water source that creates steam, and they're extracting the steam without pumping water into the facilities.
Could you just give us a real short tutorial? What exactly is geothermal power? I mean, are they bringing up lava in some ways and using that? Just help us understand what it is.
So geothermal power is using the Earth's heat source. And, you know, the Kilauea Rift Zone obviously has molten lava near the surface. So it's using the Earth's natural heat source to create energy. In the case of Puna Geothermal Venture, they find these pockets of hot steam and water. They call it brine. And they'll drill wells into that pocket of hot steam, and they'll extract it in a controlled fashion. They'll essentially scrub or clean the steam, and then they'll run it through steam turbines, very much like our steam power plants. They'll run it through their steam turbines and create energy that way. It's very similar to a steam power plant at that point. In some cases, they'll have hot water, and the water, you can't run it through a turbine. So what they'll do is they'll use a secondary fluid. They'll heat that up and flash that. That can create steam at a lower temperature. So they use the hot water to create steam with a chemical of a flash point that will actually turn into steam at a lower temperature. That's the pentane. And they'll run that through a turbine. And then they'll turn the steam back into a fluid form. And then they'll inject it back into the ground again. So that's basically the cycle that they use to create energy.
So there's no actual connection to lava under the ground when you have a geothermal plant?
No direct connection to lava, but of course the molten lava below the surface is actually creating the energy and heating up the steam source.
So I think I've asked all my questions, but I haven't asked what other challenges is ELCO facing right now. Kevin Walchin, I'm turning to you. What else should we know? What challenges are you facing in making sure we have enough power and that you can recover from this lava event, and that we can all recover from this lava event?
Currently, we have generation that is sufficient to provide for our demand and load. But as you had asked about, how do we go forward to meet the state's renewable energy? So we have that coming up in the form of the RFP. So we have that to face, and we're working on that. We also have the housing issue, or the current state of what that community is going through as far as the impact this lava has had on it. And we have a part to play in that, in establishing where that happens and where we go. And the other part that's coming up is what happens with Huhonua and what part they play in our generation mix.
Well, why don't you tell us more about Huhonua?
Huhonua is the power plant that we contracted. We signed a contract to purchase energy from. It's the old sugar mill at Pipekale Point. They plan to use biomass to actually create steam and run it through a steam boiler.
Biomass is?
Biomass is basically they're going to chip trees to create a fuel source, and they're going to actually burn the trees to create steam and then create electricity. That facility is going to be rated at 21.5 megawatts. So you can see it's approximately half of the PGV resource that we don't have at the current time. When they come online, they're scheduled to come online at the end of this year. When they come online, that's going to add stability again to the system. It's going to improve our margins. The biomass facility is similar to PGV, where it can be made available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we can actually control and dispatch them. So it is a very good resource to come online and help with the generation situation on the island.
You know, when people think about renewable energy, they tend to think of what I would say clean power sources, wind, solar being examples of that. When you're burning trees, that's very much like burning oil, is it not, in putting carbon back in the atmosphere?
Well, people, when they criticize a biomass facility, they look at that burning side of the equation. But there's also the carbon recapture side of the equation, actually replanting trees and recapturing the carbon that way through the growth of the trees. So although you're burning on one side of the equation, you're doing carbon recapture on the other side of the equation.
When they burn the trees, is the air in some way or the smoke in some way treated, or it just goes into the air?
We're explaining it in very simple terms when we're saying we're burning wood chips to create energy. But the facility is regulated by the Department of Health. They need an air quality permit. So they have very sophisticated equipment to make sure that they take out the particulates before it goes into the smokestack. They're regulated as to what their emissions can be. So it's not like your outdoor barbecue pit where it's just an open wood flame emitting smoke into the air. No, this is regulated, and you have a lot of equipment to make sure that the emissions are controlled and within permit requirements.
Okay, before we say aloha, what else would you like to add? Kevin Mulchin?
I have nothing further.
Okay. To Ignacio, anything before we say aloha?
Again, I always like to thank our employees. You know, in fact, in the Public Utilities Commission, Chair Iwasi actually commended our employees for the response to the lava flow. You know, I'd like to thank Chair Iwasi for those kind words, but I also like to thank the employees because they respond well, they come up with good ideas to help our customers and to help the community. So those are my closing words.
Thank you so much, Jay Ignacio. Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you, Kevin Walton. Aloha.
Aloha.
And a big thank you to our listeners. This is Island Issues, and I'm Sherry Bracken. And we talked with Kevin Walton and Jay Ignacio on Wednesday, June 20th at their Hilo Control Center. Until next Sunday morning and another Island Issues, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@labo105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.